This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome. It is the Bite Size Business Breakfast Podcast on a Tuesday morning, 11th of June. What have we got for you? Well, breaking news overnight. Apple finally came out with its AI strategy, artificial intelligence. But is it too little, too late? Well, that's what investors seem to think. Shares down 2% during that presentation. Details on that to come. Then, staying with investments, Gary Dugan, the Chief Executive Officer of the Global CIO Office. Bit of an election special with Gary, looking at where we put our money, markets in India after their election, Europe and the United States. Then I love this story, Eid al-Adha Economics, it's upon us this weekend, and Kareem jumping on the bandwagon. They will sell you an entire sheep. You can order it on the app. Details from their managing director, Basil Al-Nahlawi. And finally, the finance of football. Investors in Saudi Arabia linked with another takeover of an English Premier League football club. This time, it's Everton, one of the smaller clubs. Why would investors in Saudi, or indeed elsewhere, want to pay $500 million for it? The thoughts of Professor Kieran Maguire, football finance expert at the University of Liverpool. All that to come. First up, though, those top stories.
We overnight have had news coming out of Apple. They've brought ChatGPT to iPhones and their AI overhaul, Apple to boost its Siri voice assistant and operating system with OpenAI's ChatGPT as it seeks to catch up in the AI race. The iPhone maker announcing the Siri makeover along with a number of new features at its annual developers show over in California yesterday, and it has got the world talking. A couple of the other features announced yesterday: sending text via satellite, scheduling messages to send at a later point, using head gestures, nodding for yes, shaking head for no to control AirPods Pro, dedicated app for passwords that's accessible across devices, and also the ability to hide certain apps or lock them away behind Face ID or passcodes. All that and, of course, more from this latest offering from Apple. So we have been looking at that in some detail. We've also been getting a few bits and pieces from the event itself. Here's a little take of the launch of Apple Intelligence overnight. Apple Intelligence, see what they did there? AI, eh? A mashup of CEO Tim Cook, followed by the Apple senior executive Craig Federighi.
Introducing Apple Intelligence, the new personal intelligence system that makes your most personal products even more useful and delightful. To tell you all about it, here's Craig.
You can personalize these images for your conversations. So, when you wish a friend a happy birthday, you can create an image of them surrounded by cake, balloons, and flowers to make it extra festive. And the next time you tell mom that she's your hero, you can send an image of her in a superhero cape to really land your point.
That was then, this is now, Deanie. The markets didn't exactly welcome that one with the open arms, did they?
They did not. So US stocks climbing to a record high in yesterday's session, both the S&P 500 and the tech-heavy NASDAQ. But Apple shares down by 2%. Why? Well, I was listening to Mark Gurman talk about this. He's the Apple correspondent for Bloomberg, but he's more than just an Apple correspondent. He is a very closely watched Apple expert. And he said a couple of things. He said everything they announced was fine. It's what you'd expect, but there was nothing in there to catch the eye. Yeah. It was just Apple catching up with what others on smartphones have been doing for a while now. And yeah, like the tie-up with ChatGPT. He said that's basically Microsoft technology that they're using. Nothing wrong with that, but there's nothing whiz-bang in there from Apple. That's on the downside. Underwhelming was a word he and others have used. The flip side, he said, was that this is what Apple does and has been doing for years now, for decades, is it waits for a technology to become proven, it has a look, and then it just does it better in terms of design and user interface. And he gave various examples. The iMac desktop computers that came out in the late 90s, early 2000s, in the blue and pink and green colours. It was just a computer, but it just looked nicer and was nicer to use. The iPod was not the first MP3 player, we know that. Apple just did it better. iTunes was not the first streaming music service. and so on. The iPhone wasn't the first smartphone. First mover is not something that Apple necessarily does. What they do is they take proven technology and just make it better and consumerize it, was one phrase he used. So there's the glass half full version, which is that Apple's just going to make this better than everyone else. The glass half full version, which was what investors gave last night with a thumbs down, was that, you know, B plus, but must try harder.
We will, of course, be having more insight into that one throughout the day. Talking throughout the day, well, a close eye on some of the big meetings around the world today and throughout the rest of this week. The Fed meeting begins today ahead of tomorrow's rate decision. Broad consensus on keeping rates on hold, but at the margins. Question is, what will members be debating today? A question that we put to Ed Bell of Emirates NBD.
The Fed is going to start its two-day FOMC meeting today, and no change in the Fed's policy stance is expected at this meeting, either for the Fed funds rate or for the pace of quantitative tightening. The more critical takeaway is going to be the Fed's updated economic projections for the rest of this year and into 2025, particularly how they view the path of inflation and employment conditions. In the last projections, the Fed expected that core PCE inflation would cool to 2.6% this year, but so far data has been running to closer to 3%. So there could be some upward revisions to their inflation estimates.
Those thoughts, Ed Bell. We'll, of course, get more thoughts of Ed throughout the week. And we've been talking all things Everton today.
That's right. Saudi investors linked with the takeover of the Premier League football club Everton. To be fair, a lot of people have over the past week or so, including Michael Dell, the founder of the Dell Computer Company. We've been asking Kieran Maguire. He's a football finance lecturer at the University of Liverpool Management School. Why investors in Saudi Arabia, and indeed elsewhere, would want to pay $500 million for a club like Everton, which is at the bottom end of the Premier League table, has hundreds of millions of dollars in debt. This is what he had to say.
It's scarcity value. There's only 20 clubs in the Premier League at any one point in time. Everton had never been relegated from the Premier League. They are in the city of Liverpool, so it's got good transport links from both rail and air, especially for international investors. And we have seen other clubs. Manchester United was valued at around about $5 billion. A minority stake in Liverpool FC itself went for around about valued the club at $3.5 billion. So on the face of it, this looks like a useful option, but you would be inheriting a huge amount of debt as well. And the club, which in 2023 lost over $100 million. So from an operational point of view, it would be quite a challenge.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Well, let's make sense of the markets. What does it mean for all of your money? Joined by Gary Dugan, Chief Executive Officer of the Global Chief Investment Office. Morning, Gary.
Good morning.
You could say it better than me. The Global CIO Office. Gary's here. Gary, we're looking at the elections happening around the world at the moment and what it means selfishly for our portfolios, because that's what you do at the CIO Office. And you've done some analysis. So we're going to go around the world, starting east and moving west and figuring out what we have to do. Let's start, first of all, in India. Election results last week. Narendra Modi gets a third term as Prime Minister, but his majority is severely restricted. Indian stocks sold off sharply on the back of that news this time last week, but have since recovered and closed yesterday close to record highs. How do we play this one?
Yes, I think the foreign investor was the seller and the domestic investor is the buyer. So, and I'm going to run with the domestic investor. Yes, the headline news looked bad. You know, you've got someone who's been a huge personality, a person who's made substantial changes in India, all for the good in the main, and he doesn't get voted in so comprehensively. And I think it really is this third term fatigue that we often get around the world. I wouldn't just pin it on Modi and say that therefore he's a bad politician and there's bad news to come. There's good news to come. I think a more moderated policy that spreads across all branches of the economy, and particularly into the small and medium-sized companies, which have been left behind in the previous rally.
Well, there have been concerns raised about valuations in India. Leaving aside the politics, the Sensex close to 77,000 points at the moment. Small and mid-cap indexes also high. Various brokers, fund managers talking about elevated valuations, maybe even bubble valuations. If you look at a basic metric like price to earnings, India is one of the most expensive stock markets in the world.
And quite frankly, it should be. I think, you know, if you're looking at valuations, you've always got to think about, well, where's that valuation coming from? And it's the perception of the future. This is one of the few countries out there likely to, you know, with a lot of confidence, I believe, grow at above 5% GDP growth per annum, a huge population that, quite frankly, again, has not really been put to work in the most effective way by previous Modi administrations. And I expect unemployment to fall. I expect more money going to the common man, ad man me. And we are going to see, I think, a consistency of earnings growth and profits growth to support the market.
So how do we play the Indian market? If we think we like the India story, even at these valuations, do we just go and buy a Sensex or a Nifty 50 tracker fund? Do we pay a bit more and have an actively managed fund by, a Schroders or a ICICI Bank or whoever it may be?
Yeah, in recent years, it's been largely those ETFs to just buy the index. But when you've got this change of policy, which is going to be focused on the middle of the economy as opposed to the big, big companies, that's when you want to be involved in small and medium-sized companies. Therefore, if you're going to buy access to India, don't do it through an ETF. Do it through an actively managed fund. Many of these fund managers put bets on small and medium-sized companies, and that will add value over the index.
But okay, and I'm in the market for that. As regular Business Breakfast listeners will know, I'm an overseas citizen of India. My wife's Indian, so you know, we do have exposure in India. And I'm thinking the same. I've had ETFs before and I've done well out of them, but now is the time to go for an active manager. I've absolutely no idea how to pick the right active manager. This is a common problem in investment.
It is, but the good news, India is quite exceptional because if you look at the active managers, the majority, not the vast majority, but the majority of managers beat the index over extended periods of time. Now, they've all been struggling over the last couple of years, and you might look at the recent history and say, I don't want to invest with this active manager. But I think market conditions are now set for active management to outperform.
You're not going to name names. You're not Morningstar. I'm going to give me a 5-star rating on a particular fund. But are you inclined to go with a locally based fund manager, whether it's a ICICI, one of the big banks, or one of the Mumbai based fund managers? Or would you go with, for example, an actively managed Goldman Sachs India fund or an HSBC type India fund?
I prefer the local managers, but to be fair to the brand names you've mentioned, they've often got people on the ground. And it is important to have people who are traveling around the country very consistently, listening to the mood, because that's where the action is going to be. It's going to be in those small and medium-sized companies where the information flow is not so good.
Right, let's talk about Europe now. European elections over the weekend. I don't normally pay a huge amount of attention to European parliamentary elections because they're not the big deal. The big deal is the election that we've got, for example, coming up in the UK is the prime ministerial election. But the FT's gone big on it this morning. What's their headline? Markets rattled by Macron election bet on stemming the far right advance, and the CAC 40 in Paris down 1.5% yesterday. How seriously should we take this?
I just don't understand why Macron took that decision. He's only highlighted the bad news that came out of the election, which was this swing to the right. But if you just look at it with a cool head, you would have said the centre of politics is still centrist. It is still remarkably not extreme. And we should have just let things calm down for a few weeks. Instead, he just jumped straight in and unfortunately has rattled the cage and is causing damage at the moment to the political scene and to the markets in Europe.
So do we buy, sell or hold? French banks in particular hit yesterday. I think Société Générale was down 7%. Do we buy the dips or run away?
I would buy the dips. I think, you know, Europe on an underlying basis is making a comeback. We've had a cut in interest rates. If people are a bit gloomy here, it's going to suppress some of the inflation pressure we've got. And therefore, I can see the equity market rallying in weeks to come. But we may have to wait beyond the French elections.
And what do we buy in Europe? Again, do we go, what's that acronym? The granolas, wasn't it? The likes of Novo Nordisk, which makes the weight loss drugs. Do we buy the granolas? Do we buy an index?
I think you want to buy the index, but you know, a lot of focus on domestic stocks because that I think is where the story is. And we've also seen a bit of a comeback in the luxury goods companies on the hope that China will bring some stimulus to their economy, which will bring in the luxury goods demand in the fourth quarter of this year.
I've spent a lot of money on LVMH, but sadly not the stocks, the overpriced merch. We said we'd go east to west, and we're going to finish in the United States. We've done India, we've done Europe, the United States, election season there, of course, early November is when we get the election. Record high last night for the S&P 500. Buy, sell or hold?
Hold, and I've got a bias to sell. Valuation is high here. And I think people are just hoping that something gets sorted by the end of the year. But it's in a presidential election. It's going to be scoping things for the next, you know, 4 to 5 years. And I think people have just put a blindfold on, put the headset on, and don't want to hear the news. And the news is difficult. This country's got too much debt. It's got poor leadership. It's got growth that's starting to wane. And it's got interest rates coming down extremely slowly. Not a good setback drop to an equity market.
In terms of interest rates, we've got a Fed meeting starts in a few hours' time. Interest rate decision yesterday. European Central Bank cut rates last week, so did Canada. The Fed has remained stubbornly high. Where does that go?
It's all about the dots. So it's not about the decision. We think they're going to leave interest rates unchanged, but it's their predictions for how many cuts in interest rates we see to the end of the year.
Oh, and we get a new dot plot tomorrow night, don't we?
We get a lovely dot plot. They've been out with their pens and they will have changed their forecast. So there was an anticipation of 3 rate cuts.
5 seconds left, final thought.
It'll be 1 cut before the end of the year.
Gary Dugan, Chief Executive of the Global CIO Office in Dubai. Always good talking to you.
Investments go up and investments go down. Before putting your hard-earned money into any investment, Dubai Eye 103.8 advises you to always do your own background research. Ensure you're informed to navigate the market and any potential pitfalls. Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Right then, looking forward to Eid al-Adha, which is upon us this weekend. Delighted to be joined in the studio by an old friend of the Business Breakfast, Managing Director of Karim, Basil Al-Nahlawi. Basil, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Richard.
Making a lot of headlines at the moment, Basil, because over the past couple of days, Karim has launched a new initiative for Eid al-Adha. Nothing strange in that. Many companies have marketing initiatives at holiday seasons. But the fact that you've listed live sacrificial animals on your app has got people talking. I'm going to let you explain what it is you're doing, first of all.
Sure. Yeah, I know a lot of people thought it was a joke at the beginning or a stunt. But, you know, before every big event in the region, the different teams sit down and think about how can we simplify people's lives during these events. And if you think of Eid al-Adha, there's 3 main things people do. One is they visit friends and family to celebrate together. 2, they take out that family in the evening or during lunch for dinner, lunch. And 3, the mandatory obligation that Muslims have around the world is to sacrifice livestock and give it to the poor and their own families. This is different from Eid al-Fitr, which is the first Eid that comes after Ramadan, where that's just a monetary donation that is obligatory. But in this Eid, which we call the big Eid, there is this different element to it. Now, so what have we done? We've partnered with a provider that's approved by the municipality to allow customers to come in and pre-order that sacrificial livestock. And on their behalf, this will be sacrificed and prepared, ready to be donated and shared with the family.
Okay, so the logistics and the practicalities of this are what people are looking at. Because, you know, there have been people who've been, you know, there are memes about this, you know, a goat turning up on the back of a green motorcycle at an apartment block in Alcasais. I mean, that's not going to happen, is it?
No, you won't see any goats or sheep in our ride-hailing cars or motorbikes. Everything will be done by the butcher. In general, actually, if you think of the offline process, you go to your local butcher in your neighborhood and you say, I want X, Y, or Z, and gets prepared for you and delivered to you on that day, or you go pick it up, actually.
So while on the Karim app, and again, this has been shared multiple times online, there are pictures of a live animal.
Yes.
That's not what you get.
No, so you do not get any live animals. The butcher will sacrifice the animal and prepare it into 3 portions, which is what you're supposed to do. You take 1 portion for your family. You give 1 portion to your friends and neighbors. And the 3rd portion goes to those in need in the community.
And so the butcher will help to donate that, so you don't have to, because the practicalities of distributing that meat personally in June with these temperatures, there are hygiene requirements. Yes. Will the butcher distribute it for you?
So if you look at the app today, it's being delivered to you and you're doing that. In the next couple of days, donating on your behalf, the option will go live. Now, there's still customers who prefer receiving it, and the numbers are telling. But in 2-3 days, pending some permits, we will also deliver on your behalf.
Because that is a lot of meat for a household to deal with, isn't it? I'm looking at the prices are above 1,000 dirhams, am I right? Just tell us what the prices are.
Yes, there's prices ranging from 1,200 to 1,600. Now, these are high quality lamb and sheep. And they are the entire carcass split up into different pieces. So it depends on the number of kgs. It can vary between 12 to 16 kgs and then get splits into three portions for you.
Okay. So in terms of Kareem, you're a large organization. What bigger portion of your business will this be this weekend or this week during Eid al-Adha? Is it essentially a promotion or is it going to make a difference?
These are large ticket prices. It's more expensive than the regular hamburger that you order on the food service or your grocery basket that you order on a daily basis. So it is significant. However, in terms of volumes, it probably will not be as large and somewhere in the low thousands, I would assume.
And what about for people who do want to make the sacrifice themselves? Again, we know there are laws and regulations about who can and cannot slaughter animals, but traditionally, some families do like to do it themselves.
Yes. I think there's some guidelines by the government on that. Kareem probably cannot help you on that front. Either I think something can happen through your local butcher or through some government-approved locations.
Okay, good stuff. So if people want to buy the sacrificial animal, one of the ways they can do it is through Kareem. There are others as well. Fine. Let's talk more broadly about the economics of the forthcoming Eid al-Adha. We know quite well how the economics of Ramadan and Eid al-Fitr work, but what about Eid al-Adha? It's a different dynamic socially, religiously, culturally, and therefore, I'm sure, economically as well. Do you see a spike in food purchases? Do you see a reduction as people travel? What do you plan for?
Yeah, I think it's about providing customers, the right customers, the right opportunities. I think in the past, you're right, Ramadan usually dips on food because people are eating more at home and so on. But this year, we customized our service a little bit more. And we were able to tell which customers are fasting, which customers are not fasting for that we have. And we started tailoring the service more to them. And we did not see the annual dip that we saw in Ramadan for the last 4 or 5 years. So
normally you would see a dip of what, 10% or 20% or something?
In Ramadan, it was somewhere up to 20% dips. This was on
restaurant food.
Yes, restaurant food. You don't see a massive dip on rides. People are still moving around. Times change, obviously, but not. But on food, that's what you see. You see a spike in groceries in our grocery business. People start ordering a lot more home, making their own food during Ramadan and so on. But because we tailored our services a little bit more, we actually did not see any dip this year. And I'll give you an example. We have this dine-out service, which is discounts on restaurants if you go dine in the restaurants versus order home. And that actually spiked during Ramadan and Eid, the last Eid and Ramadan.
And what about Eid al-Adha? We've got about a minute left with you, Basil. What about Eid al-Adha?
Yeah,
this weekend and
it's the middle of exams. I don't think a lot of people will be traveling and it's not the entire week. I don't expect any dips. I do expect a spike in our dine-out services. People will go out more. Some will order larger meals to the house. And I think we might also see a spike in our groceries. So we're excited about that, just because maybe we've cracked something here.
And finally, in terms of competition for your grocery business, clearly you're one of the leading players, but it is a competitive market. We spoke recently, for example, with Spinney Supermarket saying, you know, we're launching our own rapid delivery because we want to bring this in-house. Others are doing the same. What dynamics are you seeing there? A quick word on that.
Yes, super competitive, 100%. And you have to think of how do you stay ahead. For a while, it's been our speed that keeping us ahead. There's something cooking, which probably I can share more in September with.
Basil, no one's listening. It's just me and you.
I think we will stand out very soon in terms of quality.
Basil, good talking to you. Appreciate that. Thanks very much indeed for joining us ahead of Eid al-Adha. Plans yourself for the long break?
Yes, nothing. I'll stay in Dubai, make sure we don't dip. But then I think planning the summer, pretty exciting with the family.
Basil Al-Nahlawi is Managing Director of Careem. As always, nice talk to you. Appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you. Thank you, Richard. Thanks for having me.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Let's get more on one of those top stories now. A Saudi investor apparently bidding $500 million to buy Everton Football Club. We'll get the thoughts of one expert first of all. First of all, though, Tom, let's hear from Everton Football Club in action, the second club in Liverpool after Liverpool FC. But this is them earlier this season recording a rare victory over their local rivals.
Tarkowski keeping it alive. Harrison, Godfrey, blocked inside the penalty area. Brathwaite, it's in, surely it is now. Dominic Calvert-Lewin for Everton slides it over the line. Jared Brathwaite is claiming it. He was certainly the man who took it underneath Alisson. And Everton have the lead in the Merseyside derby.
Let's bring in now Professor Kieran Maguire, football finance lecturer at the University of Liverpool Management School, also host of the award-winning Price of Football podcast and author of two books on the business of football. Kieran, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for the invite.
So $500 million for Everton Football Club. It's Premier League, but bottom half of the Premier League. Why would investors in Saudi Arabia and elsewhere want to pay $500 million for it?
It's scarcity value. There's only 20 clubs in the Premier League at any one point in time. Everton had never been relegated from the Premier League. They are in the city of Liverpool, so it's got good transport links from both rail and air, especially for international investors. And we have seen other clubs. Manchester United was valued at around about $5 billion. A minority stake in Liverpool FC itself went for around about valued the club at $3.5 billion. So on the face of it, this looks like a useful option, but you would be inheriting a huge amount of debt as well. And the club, which in 2023 lost over $100 million. So from an operational point of view, it would be quite a challenge.
Yeah, that debt, I've been reading various reports, including yours. It's hundreds of millions of dollars, perhaps even approaching $1 billion by some estimates.
Yes, I think it's fair to say that the club has not been managed very prudently since Farhad Moshiri acquired the club in 2016. He tried to accelerate Everton in terms of success on the pitch. So the wage bill doubled, the investment in players more than doubled as well with regards to transfer spend. And that didn't turn into success on the pitch. The club was had a points deduction last season for financial misdemeanors and could potentially face one again in 24-25. So it's borrowed from a variety of sources, including 777 Partners, who had exclusive rights to acquire the club but failed to submit sufficient documentation to the UK football authorities.
It seems that there's a trend emerging here among Gulf investors, and we're in Dubai. We've got Saudi investors, the PIF, buying a majority of Newcastle United Football Club a couple of years ago. That's a turnaround club, sleeping giant, not a big deal in terms of value, a few hundred million dollars, but they see the potential. And of course, the poster child is Manchester City, when Sheikh Mansour bought it 15 years ago or more now for just a couple of hundred million dollars. It was sleeping giant, was being generous. It was absolutely nowhere. It was a Premier League club. But he succeeded in turning it around. And I saw the recent Forbes valuation on Man City at about $5 billion. Gulf investors seem to like this play, Kieran. What do you make of it?
Yes, I can understand from their perspective. For a relatively modest sum, as you rightly pointed out, if you think, you know, how much Microsoft invested to acquire Activision, it was around about $80 billion for a games company. You are acquiring a seat in an industry which has global profile. The Premier League itself is exported to 197 countries each week via the broadcast deals. So therefore, it's very good in terms of profile. There's been significant investment in the city of Manchester itself from Abu Dhabi with regards to the Manchester City acquisition. And it's great to watch football, whether you're watching it physically there or via a broadcast link. The benefits are soft power. The benefits are intangible, but they certainly help to increase the profile of the investor. And it's to a certain extent a trophy asset. So, you know, we see significant investment in the racehorsing industry, in Formula One, in other sporting hubs, because the leisure dollar is very, very high. Football attracts a huge tourism industry itself in terms of hospitality, as well as people physically attending matches. And it's proven to be very beneficial for those clubs or for those investors from the Middle East who have chosen to go into the Premier League.
And yet there are challenges facing Premier League clubs in terms of the finances of football at the moment, because there's a bit of a, can I call it a crackdown by the Premier League, but also by UEFA, European football's governing body, on things like financial fair play to make sure that big wealthy investors don't come in and just throw money at clubs. Roman Abramovich and Chelsea would be one example. That can't really happen anymore because of these rules. Have a listen to this, Kieran, if you will. It's Khaldun Mubarak, very well-known figure here in the UAE. He runs one of the sovereign wealth funds here, but he's also chairman of Man City on behalf of Sheikh Mansour. This was him speaking last week on a Manchester City internal video on more than 100 charges that Manchester City are facing from the Premier League when it comes to football finances.
Of course, it's frustrating. I think the reference is always frustrating, having it being talked about the way it's being talked about. I can feel, of course, for our fan base, for everyone associated with the club, to have, you know, these charges constantly referenced. I think we as a club have to respect that there's a process that that we have to go through, and we're going through it. It's taking longer than what anyone hoped for, but it is what it is. And I've always repeated that in every interview I've done with you, Chris, is let's be judged by the facts and not by claims and counterclaims.
So that was Khaldun Mubarak commenting on the charges. Kieran, I'm not going to ask you to be a kangaroo court and sit in judgment on Manchester City on those specifically. That process will take its course. But more broadly, these tougher rules on the finance of football and wealthy investors coming in and spending money on football clubs, to what extent do they change the economics?
I think there is an element of protectionism in the football industry. The existing wealthy clubs who are used to effectively guaranteed participation in competitions such as the Champions League and also winning trophies domestically, they have a significant financial advantage over what you might call the disruptor clubs. And I'd include the likes of Paris Saint-Germain, Manchester City, potentially Newcastle United, Chelsea and so on. And therefore, they introduced financial control rules to try to restrict investment by new owners. So it has created a tense environment. A lot of clubs have ceased to be allies and have become enemies because of these financial rules. If we take a look at the Premier League itself, although it is the most successful football league in the world in terms of revenue generation, 19 out of 20 clubs in the Premier League actually lost money at an operational level in 2023. So the rules in theory are there to try to keep those losses to an acceptable limit. But what's acceptable to one club who's existingly successful is not necessarily appropriate for another club that wants to accelerate. So it is causing tensions within the Premier League itself.
Kieran, can't let you go without asking you about the Euros. Starts on Friday, 10 seconds left. Who's going to win it?
Germany for me. I think they're at home. They are underrated, but never bet against the Germans in a tournament.
Kieran, great talk to you. Appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for being with us. The thoughts there of Professor Kieran Maguire. He's a football finance lecturer at the University of Liverpool.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com. You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.